Hey, listener, what's up? This is episode 111 of the Jock and Nerd Podcast. We are live on Blab for a new edition of Jock and Nerd Weekly. Hang out with us because we're going to be geeking about comic book related news from the screen to the page for Saturday, June 25th, 2016. Let's do this.
This is the Jock and Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Anthony and Imran.
Hi, y'all. This is the Jock and Nerd Podcast. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he's the nerd.
And joining us, because we're live on Blab, from a deep, dark, muggy basement, the one and only Rug Boy. Good Earth to you, Rugs. What's up?
Good Earth to you, Imran. Good Earth to you, Anthony. And what's up, motherfucker?
What's up, dudes? You always...
Yeah, let's get some energy going in
there. Your greetings always crack me the fuck up. Yeah, look. Let's get some energy going because we are doing a daytime Blab. It feels dirty. Yeah. It feels wrong, but
it feels weird.
You know,
usually at this time, I'm in a coffin with dirt poured on me so I can avoid the light like a vampire.
Listener, watch the video because you will see us bathed in daylight and actual natural light. It's very weird. Hey, if you are a new first-time listener, thanks for checking us out. This is what we're going to do. We're just going to geek out over some of the cool comic book geek news over the week. There's always stuff breaking. And we got some listener feedback, and then we open it up in the Blab and geek out with you guys. It's going to be lots of fun, but before we begin, you guys, I got to issue a couple of alerts.
Okay.
First of all, I may be all messed up because I ran a 5K this morning.
Oh, yeah, remember how that goes.
And I'm not a runner. It's the one race I do. It's fine. This is like the fourth year in a row I did this particular race. I didn't even bother checking my time. I was like, I don't care. I finished. I'm out of here.
As long as I'm not dead when this is over.
I managed to run most of it. My legs are sore. So, like, I'm between that tired and high energy, but tired. So, I might be all over the place. Bear with me. The other reason things may get a little wacky is I have two dogs in the room with me right now. Let me explain.
In the room?
Yes. Here's why.
Shit.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Well, I have my dog, Joplin, Golden Retriever. She's awesome. She's not going to be the problem. But listener, and I don't know if you guys know, we foster dogs. My wife and I foster dogs. We've been doing this for a while, like a couple years. We've moved about, I got to say, like 20, 30 dogs. We foster them. But my wife's not here, and we have a six-month-old puppy named Camo.
Oh, shit.
Oh, I want to see the puppy.
Camo, come here. He is a Shar Pei and black chocolate lab mix.
Whoa.
After this is over, and I decide to go back home whenever that is and get out of my parents' house because I don't have a computer at my apartment, I might stop by.
Really? Yeah, you want to meet the puppy?
So I want to meet the puppy.
Camo is – so I can't – I don't want to leave him in the crate. I feel bad. I can't have him loose in the house. I don't know what he's going to do. He just, like, he's been here for, like, 3 days. I barely know him.
Oh.
But there right now, they're chilling in the room. Everything's cool. However, my wife gets home. There may be lots of barking. Listener, I'll try to edit around it. You guys in the Blab, just brace yourself for a little bit of barking. That's all.
Hey, I can get with that.
In the post show, I will bring the puppy up if you really want to see
okay.
him. So
I would like to see
you guys chill down there. All right, and I got a bag of treats, so I'm all prepared. Everything's cool. Let's get to the news.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
There may be barking. Hey, there's lots of stuff broke. Just when you think like there's no more news, there was this crazy bunch of set visits to the Justice League movie set. Here's what happened. This is
you're gonna have to update me for sure because although I know about some of this, when you go to Las Vegas like I did, it's like going into the Matrix and things happen around you that you don't realize until
that's right. And I want
you're way far behind after that.
Right. I will talk about that. Anthony just was at last week and we were at EDC, which is like electronic music camping. Going to, going to dance camp almost, going to Neo Tokyo from Akira. It looked like Tron, the pictures from that place. And you're right, you don't know the outside world. All this shit happened, and you're still kind of like coming down from that, aren't you, Anthony?
I am like, I just yesterday and not like today, I'm kind of feeling like myself again.
Wow.
It's taken a while. Staying a long time.
And all of the mollies got to run through your system.
Well, yeah, you got. If you take that many mollies, it takes a couple of days for it to. Yeah. Listen, I've been to a jam band concert. I know what that's like. I came back. My brain was broken for like 3 days. I was like, duh.
I used to be human before I went to Firefly.
Ruggs was human, and then he went to Bonnaroo, and he came back a puppet.
Yeah. Oh shit!
This is just post Molly.
And you did wear the douchebag tank top tee. Send us a picture.
Yeah, man. I sent you a picture where I was wearing it the first night.
In the show notes, listener. Oh, by the way.
There was at one point where I took off the shirt because it was so hot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a jock. I'm going to show off the bod. And then, like, an hour later, I'm like, what am I doing? I got to promote. So I just kept it. I put it right back on.
Right on. That's what I'm talking about. And I'll put that photo in the show notes. Listener, we're going to talk about a lot of things. Check out the links at the show note, jockandnerd.com/111. Now, Anthony, here's what you missed. Check out this move. Let me know what you guys think about this move by Warner Brothers. They flew out a bunch of bloggers, Devin Faraci, the guys from Collider, the guys from Heroic Hollywood, people that were critical, which is everybody, of Batman versus Superman. They flew them out to London for a fucking set visit on Justice League.
Oh, shit.
Not just a set visit. They were in the war room. They saw a scene being filmed. They were shown the new Batmobile. They were shown there's a new Justice League logo. They were shown a clip, an edited sequence from the movie. They got to talk to Ben Affleck. They got to talk to producer Deborah Snyder and Zack Snyder. Wow. First of all, What do you guys think of this move? I think it's they must be really confident, or they're smart for doing this 17 months before this fucking movie comes out.
Are they kind of digging for like clues on what to do from these critics, or what do you think?
I think they're trying to show them that this is going to be a different movie, that we've listened to your criticisms and it's affected the tone of the movie. Anthony, what do you think?
I don't know if I believe that.
I would lean towards what Imran is saying. I think that's what they're trying to do. I think they're also somewhat confident in this direction. They want to acknowledge that, yes, we're learning from our mistakes, and they want to get ahead of it very early so that they want to control the narrative as best as they can, and this is how they think they can get ahead of it.
Well, usually what happens, and if you've ever been, you ever read Ain't It Cool News?
Yes, Harry Knowles. Yeah.
Well, Harry Knowles used to be reputable, and then like all these guys started like buddying up to him and having him come to the set and everything, and then he felt compelled to be a little bit more lenient in his reviews.
I think you know what I mean? As well,
so they're like greasing palms. They're greasing the assholes of everybody.
Or is it possible they've actually started to learn their lesson? Because look, listen.
Why do you think that? Why do you have faith in Zack Snyder?
Because of what I've there was so many things that came out of the set visit because of the tone. Let's start with this. They saw a scene being filmed on the roof of Gotham with J.K. Simmons as Gordon. They said he looked just like from the comic book. And it was kind of a funny scene with Batman and Cyborg and Wonder Woman
and Flash.
So the more we're here, you're going to see that this Ezra Miller's Flash is really injecting the lighthearted tone into this movie. Basically, they do the whole thing where they kind of meet, and I guess Cyborg, this is when he joins the team, and Gordon turns away and turns back. And everyone's disappeared except for the Flash. And he's like, did they just do that? And like, he didn't get the memo to disappear. So right away, I was like, okay, that's fun. That's funny. You're getting a little bit of fun things in there. There was another scene where Bruce meets Barry Allen that I thought was really funny. Like, they described it as Bruce goes to meet Barry, and he's asking him. He's talking to him. He's trying to get him to, like, break that he's the Flash, and finally he just gets impatient and Bruce throws a batarang. They saw this. This is all edited. Throws a batarang at Barry, at which point Barry slows times down. He looks at it, goes around and grabs it. He's like, hey, you're Batman, aren't you? Puts two and two together. And Bruce asks him to be on the team, and before he can even finish the question, Barry's like, yeah, I'll do it. He goes, I need friends. Then he holds up the batarang. He goes, can I keep this? Like, I love these lines. I love this little fun take. That's this kind of fun humor they're injecting using Barry Allen in this so far. So I like those two things already.
Okay, it sounds very Avengery.
They're trying to go for that.
This is so funny because they really are starting to mimic what's going on at Marvel. But that's kind of what they should have done anyways, and not just been like, we're not going to do it out of spite. So this movie takes place a few months after Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice.
Yep.
This is now a standalone movie. They're talking about as this a solo encompassing story. Not they have scheduled Justice League 2, but they're like, this is one movie. They're not going Justice League 1, Justice League 2, which is that's kind of interesting. The synopsis is basically Batman feels something is coming and he needs to assemble a group that can fight the threat. The story is finding the group, putting them together. Part of the fun is watching all these personalities come together. And that, so the movie's MacGuffin, of course, the mother boxes. There's three mother boxes. The one belongs to mankind, one belongs to the Amazons, and Amazonians, not Amazon.com. They'll deliver it by drone. And one is in Atlantis with Aquaman. Each looks similar, but they're different colors and they have different symbols. And the movie's going to explain what the mother boxes do. Steppenwolf is the villain, but they haven't casted the guy yet. There's going to be more parademons.
I think there's a line that Ben Affleck's Batman says something along the lines of referring to the parademons, like flying monkeys or something like that.
Oh, yeah. So there's like flying monkey reference. We know who Defoe is playing. He's playing Volko, which is he's an Atlantean from Aquaman, from a friend of Aquaman. He's not really a friend. He kind of turned on him in the comics in the New 52.
He's like the older generation of Aquaman.
Atlanteans. Zeus, Deborah Snyder says Zeus, the god Zeus has a small part of the movie with the Mother Box history lesson.
Nice.
Snyder says they have yet to film a scene with all of the members in the Justice League together. Junkie XL is doing the score without Hans Zimmer. This one is great. Deborah Snyder, and she's probably got to say this, but she goes, one of the things they learned from the reaction to Batman versus Superman is audiences don't want their superheroes deconstructed. And to that, I say, no fucking shit. It's about time you learn that. Why did you even think? They basically said that BVS was as dark as this is going to get. That was supposed to be the dark movie.
Let me just interject, though, right there. And I know what they're basically trying to use. They're trying to say that the audience didn't like the film, but they can't say it that explicitly.
Yep.
So they have to say something. They have to use a term, and they went with, the audience doesn't like deconstruct.
Yeah, they blame the audience because they didn't stick to the comics at all about what they would do with the heroes. It has nothing to do with it being dark. It has nothing to do with it being deconstructed. It's just that Batman and Superman are doing things that they would normally not do.
It's the writing.
You would only do that in extreme circumstances that were like Elseworlds or something like that. Right. Not in the main continuity. It would never happen in Super Friends unless like somebody was possessed or something, you know?
I mean, that's.
I mean, here's the thing too. Is like to deconstruct something, you have to construct it first. And this was only the second film in a series. The first with Batman in it. I mean, Civil War movie came out the same summer. That one had a lot of deconstruction too. Iron Man was deconstructed. Captain America. The difference was there was 10 films of construction.
Yeah, they built it. They put the time.
You have
in
to build it. Like, I think I've said this before on the podcast, but Dark Knight Returns, which a lot of Batman versus Superman is based off of, has a ton of history before it. You can't take that story and then make it the second part of a beginning of a story and make it make any sense. It doesn't work like that. There's context with everything.
And, you know, all this stuff I'm reading about Justice League, it's great and all, but none of it addresses the story, what the story is. And that was the main issue with BVS is the writing was the story. They missed it. They didn't get it. And so this stuff is, while it's making me hopeful, I have yet to hear anything about actual story and plot, you know?
I'll say I am like hopeful because the scenes you mentioned, I read them too, and they read well on paper.
Yeah.
And they read funny on paper.
Yeah.
The only thing is that worries me is, again, it seems like, instead of having a plan, they're just reacting to things. So like Man of Steel, they were like, people were so all up in arms that Man of Steel, they destroyed a whole city. So then they made it a point to like focus on Superman's role in destroying the city in BV Superman and the fact that this last battle, no one's around. Well, now it's like, man, it's too dark. So now we got to make it light. Like, I know Warner Brothers doesn't have the luxury of planning things out. They have to hit home runs every time, so they're very reactionary.
They continue to be also, reactionary.
It's screams of being reactionary again instead of having a plan.
But they're trying, man. Like some of the stuff they're saying it's going to be a lighter tone. You're going to see Atlantis in different time periods in Justice League. Like I said, a classic Commissioner Gordon. The new vehicles sound badass. First of all, I'll put a link to Devin Faraci's article where there is a picture of him standing in front of the Batmobile, like throwing up gang signs or something. I don't know what he's doing, but this Batmobile looks pretty amazing. But there's two more vehicles. There's one called the Flying Fox and the Nightcrawler. So the Flying Fox is like a C-130 size giant bat ship that carries – it's going to carry the Batmobile, and the whole Justice League will be traveling in this giant fucking bat ship called the Flying Fox. It's a three-story ship, and it could fit the Batmobile in there.
That's cool.
That's fucking cool. There's an upgraded Batmobile. The Nightcrawler. The Nightcrawler is kind of like Spidey's new spider buggy. Basically what they're saying is imagine the top of the Batmobile, and instead of wheels, it's got four spider legs, so it could come out and kind of walk on weird surfaces.
Who drives that?
I don't know. I guess he's going to drive that too. There's some tunnels set. Seen that there's a tunnel that was unfinished between Gotham and Metropolis, and apparently this is where the Nightcrawler will be crawling, like, on the tunnel upside down kind of shit. It's massive, so hard to reach terrain. The fucking spider legs come out.
I'm not really impressed by that at all. These vehicles seem to be, like, when Zack Snyder uses the vehicles, they're really, like, throwaways. They just, like, they don't really do anything that's, I mean,
the tech looks cool, but they don't really.
Like, the Tumbler, that was a part of, like, that movie, the Tumbler.
Yeah, because it was almost a character, yes.
And it didn't change. Yes. Every movie, he had the Tumbler.
Yeah.
All right, that was his fucking thing. And then sometimes he used the motorcycle version of the Tumbler, and then he had the Batwing at the end. So in the Nolan movies, like, those things stuck around. Now they keep throwing, you know, these weird ass things that don't really exist. It's crazy.
It's almost like before where you have to just redesign the Batmobile every movie for some reason. Like every time, just make it new.
They had a winner with the Tumbler.
The Tumbler was nice. This, I like this design. It kind of has the big wheels of the Tumbler, but it's lower to the ground. And it's gothic looking. A couple of other interesting bits. There's still a lot more stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking at this as we. I mean, there's a lot.
What I thought was interesting is the designer, Wilkinson, they're printing a lot of their costumes in-house on 3D printers. So we got information about Flash's suit. This is kind of cool. The suit he's wearing is prototype, and it's kind of the suit we saw in BVS when he's coming out. From what they gathered, it seems that Barry Allen may have broken into NASA and using 3D printers to help him make the outfit. It's made up of 148 pieces. The cowl alone has 70 pieces. All the pieces have numbers on them to help put it together. And so this is armor, this Flash suit. So the suit doesn't make him fast, but it's to protect him from heat.
Yeah, they're saying that it's from NASA because he like stole it. It's the stuff they use on spaceships so
for
they don't
re-entry.
Burn up.
Yeah.
Re-entry, because he's going so fast. Which kind of makes sense. I mean, I'm very curious to see how this looks. And then they're saying that there's a ton of wires on this suit.
This part I didn't understand. In CGI, they're going to make the wires look like the electric sparks. Yeah, there's wires coming off, but I don't know if it's for practical effects.
I read that the guy that designed it once, he wanted to recreate the effect that, because everyone draws a Flash, there's electricity all around him. So he wants to create that effect make it look.
So they're using some kind of practical wires to do it instead of just, like, putting it in afterwards. That's kind of interesting. However, Cyborg's costume is being created digitally from the neck down. It's going to be all CGI. In the set reports, it said that Ray Fisher basically came out in his pajamas to shoot scenes because they're just going to digitally replace him with CGI costumes.
Cool.
So. Did you see Aquaman, what they said about his
No.
suit? It was kind of, they said his was, I read his on Faraci's article. It was very like muted, like very Snyder-esque with like the chainmail and the green and gold. But like, you know, it looked like Snyder had a huge hand in making that suit. And then I read the Wonder Woman suit's the same.
Yeah.
But there's the red on the breastplate. And what that supposedly is, it's either red blood, congealed blood from the victims of her past.
Oh, shit.
Or a symbol for that. And I was like, oh, that's so fucking Snyder.
Very is.
You need to explain the red because it's congealed blood. Oh,
it's red because she's killed. So they sing
many victims.
Her costume is 5,000 years old. Justice League has to dress 3,000 extras, and it has 200 speaking parts.
Oh, shit.
Holy shit, people. That's
crazy.
That's
a lot of fucking people.
That's a lot. What is going on in this movie?
I don't know. It's weird.
It's filming and okay, here's another thing. A couple other things. Nobody talked about Superman. Rumor is that he may not come back till like the third act, and he may have like the fucking 90s mullet, a little bit longer hair, because, I don't know, his hair grew while he was dead or not dead or something. But where Superman fits into this is yet, he's probably going to come in towards the end when they're like, it's the last ditch effort. They can't stop
him. Dead.
Yeah.
And they so they think that he's dead, but he's probably regenerating. Dead. But without any sunlight, how is he going to get better? I don't know. He's in the ground.
He's in the ground. So, I mean, it must be like they can't defeat Steppenwolf. He comes in finally at the end. Also, Jesse Eisenberg, they wrap in September, but Eisenberg isn't going to get to the set until August. So he has yet to actually film anything for this movie. That's also interesting.
Well, they're on. I looked at. They're on day 31 of 111.
Oh, so. Of 111. Okay, so his parts just don't come until the end, probably.
Yeah, they're still relatively early.
But man, for them to—I mean, they've been shooting this since April. For them to do this and just everyone, all the people blogging seem to have hope for this movie now, which kind of gives me a little bit of hope. I feel like they may have learned one lesson that look, there's jokes in here. It's a little bit brighter. They're shooting things in daylight. That's what they kept saying. Like, it's bright daylight. The other thing they were like, people are smiling. There's people smiling on screen on the set. And I was like, okay. All right.
Yeah, Farachi listed a specific scene where Wonder Woman, like, just cracks a smile about something. And he was like, he was all giddy over that. I do have to say, though, that they went above and beyond. Like, I read that Ben Affleck usually doesn't talk to the press while he's in the midst of filming.
Yeah.
But like in between scenes, he would come over in the Batman cowl and start talking and like answering questions, which is like cool. But it's also very calculated in terms of swaying the press. Image. To be on the
absolutely.
Side.
Yeah. One of the Collider guys was like, dude, Ben was right there. Like Batman was right there. And I was trying to ask him questions, but be professional. I'm like, it's fucking Batman standing in front of me.
Yeah. And when you bring in, at the end of the day, when you bring in a bunch of nerds on set,
that's going to cloud any Batman, judgment when Batman just talks to you.
Well, let me just say this. You got so many talented people involved in this movie. You have, Zack Snyder is talented when he's doing things in his wheelhouse, but for some reason he has contempt for superheroes and he wants to reshape them and recreate them as his own. So, and not only that, but the writers that are on board are following suit in that whole thing and not respecting the essence of the characters. So it's not that Batman versus Superman was like a terrible, terrible movie that cannot be seen. You can't. It has plenty of value in Batman versus Superman. There's plenty of cool shots, plenty of great costume design and all that stuff.
Yes.
It's just, what are you doing with these characters and why are they doing dumb things all the time?
Well,
so he's got to fix that. That's the only thing. It's a very easy thing to fix. And if he does that, we should all have hope for this movie because it can be good.
This is what makes me hopeful is you're right. That was the Snyder, David S. Goyer writing combination. It's not good. So this movie, first of all, you got Chris Terrio writing. You got Ben Affleck executive producing and writing. You get Jeff Johns in there. These guys should be able to handle the story and the character and hopefully, you know, lead Snyder to direct something that has some good character moments and not leave out and like edit out bad things and leave in stupid things. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like
Ben Affleck's been quoted as saying too that his role, like he said, Jeff Johns is going to be a huge part of this movie. He's also said that his role, like he's in it as an executive producer so that they take the Batman character where he wants so that when his solo film comes out, it still connects and makes
sense. Look at this foresight. That's already he's thinking ahead. I like this already. This is like the one thing none of these fuckers have done until this point. He's like, I'm here because I'm going to have to direct one of these movies. What if something happens here is going to affect that? He's kind of being the Kevin Feige, even though it should be like, I guess Jeff Johns and Ben Affleck should share that. And then if Snyder blows this movie, I think that he's not getting Justice League 2.
All right, let's do a quick survey. What's the percentage that you feel that this movie is going to be better than BVS?
Jesus, it can't be worse, man. Can it?
Like, do you think it's going to be 100% better?
Ooh, I don't know about 100%. I'm not giving them that much faith right away.
It'll be at least 50% better just because you will see more characters that we've never seen on screen.
And before. That'll do okay. If it's even 50%, yes. If it makes it to that mark, yes. I think that'll be a passable, well-received movie. If it's 50% better.
I mean, yeah. But then you have to worry. The BVS had like 3 characters and it was jumbled. This thing's got fucking 200 heroes. Oh boy, can he handle something like this?
They made it so unwieldy, though. I mean, that's all the writing. They cluttered that thing up with stupidity.
Yes.
Redundant things going on all the time. Like, they were slamming you over the head with things. They don't need to do that.
Now, so
I mean, the dynamic is there, though. You've seen, like, team, you know, we saw the Avengers. You've seen, like, team films like X-Men and, like, even, like, Ghostbusters and
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where it's like, the team needs to come together. They fail at first. There's a lot of like humor in them, like getting together and being like, who the hell are you? And then they fail at first and then they succeed at the end. Like, that's a very simple storyline that they should be able to pull off.
Yeah. And there's a lot of heart in there that you can easily translate.
We'll see. I mean, that scene was
Chris. So Chris Terrio writing the screenplay. There's no David S. Goyer. So right there, there's your 40% better because there's no fucking David S. Goyer on this. But we'll see. Also, there was a new logo. What do you guys think of the logo? It's very comic booky.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I like it.
Tall.
Yeah, I like it. It's not crazy dark.
No, it's like I mean, fun.
It's black
comic
and white,
book-y.
But there's a lot, you know, the font is hopeful and the star in there.
I like the star over the eye and see and just everything in these descriptions. I already see more fun, and that's my main criticism. Is nobody's fucking smiling? Nobody's having fun enough, and this sounds like fun already.
Yeah, I'm hopeful.
So we'll see. All right, moving on. One more thing, piece of DC movie news. The runtime of Suicide Squad may or may not have been revealed. This is a kind of funny thing that happened because Film Feed tweeted Suicide Squad runtime revealed to be listed at 1 hour and 40 minutes. That's 100 minutes, all right? David Ayer replies to that tweet, not true.
Oh, shit.
Now, whatever the runtime is, look, 100 minutes? That's like one of the shortest superhero runtime movie lengths we've had. All these other movies have been really long, 2 hours,
well,
close to 2 hours.
Well, didn't they go into reshoots and stuff like that? So
they
wouldn't
did,
you think it would be longer?
Yeah. So, but think about this. Deadpool, 108 minutes. This movie that stars 11 motherfucking characters in a team is 8 minutes less than Deadpool.
Oh, shit.
Are they going to be able to tell a story with all those characters in 100 minutes?
Well, they're not fucking around. They're going right into the plot.
It has to be quick. It's got to get right to the character, right to the story. That part makes me a little bit concerned. Like, is it going to be too much shoved in? Are we not going to get enough character?
So it's 2 hours would be like the best time. Like 2 hours is good.
2 hours isn't bad for a movie with 11 characters.
Yeah,
you know,
but maybe they're throwing you right into. I always, a lot of these superhero films have done like the origin thing, but maybe they're just throwing you right in the middle of it, and you just got to pick it. You just got to pick up speed and run along, or you're going to be caught. You know, I kind of like that if
listen,
that's what they're doing.
I hope
what
that
movie does that though, like
where it just throws you right in the middle.
Yeah. Like Mission Impossible, I guess, or yeah,
I mean, the second Avengers movie started in battle.
Yeah,
you know,
that was a good movie.
Look,
there's a lot of comics do that where they'll throw you in like the first page, the splash page of battle going on. You're like trying to figure out, all right, what the hell's going on?
If this means that you're going to give me a tight action heavy Suicide Squad movie. Do it. Perfect. But think about all the shit they got to do. There's like Harley Quinn's backstory and Joker and Batman. And they got to break out and there's Enchantress.
I don't think they're going to explain any of this. I think they're just going to go right into it and you're going to have to catch up.
So in his defense, David Ayer's other movies, Sabotage, End of Watch, all clocked in at 1 hour 49. So it's about the same length. So he's used to this.
Maybe that's his happy place.
That might be his happy place. Hey, if he could do it. But Fury was 2 hours 14 minutes. So, and that had a bunch of people in it. So,
it was a good movie.
Interesting. They've wrapped production. They've wrapped post production too, I think, on Suicide Squad. So, Fury was a good movie.
I would hope so. That movie comes out in about
August.
A month.
Yeah. In August. Okay, let's do some Marvel movie news. I'm going to start with the fact that Captain America, Civil War, crossed $400 million domestically at the U.S. box office.
Oh, shit.
Is that the first movie of the year to do that, I think?
$400 million?
Yeah.
I don't know offhand, but probably I would assume, yeah.
That brings the film's total gross to over $1 billion. And it's unlikely they're saying that any other film will top Civil War in domestic bucks. So that's good.
Good for them.
That's good for them. And then so we got a couple of synopsises from Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and Doctor Strange. So let's see what it says. For Guardians of the Galaxy, these synopsises, you know, if they put these out, they aren't very informative, which is kind of funny.
I hate reading the synopsises.
They don't tell you anything. So, like, what is the point? So, okay, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Set to the backdrop of Awesome Mixtape Number 2, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 continues the team's adventures as they traverse the outer reaches of the cosmos. The Guardians must fight to keep their newfound family together as they unravel the mystery of Peter Quill's true parentage. Old foes become new allies, and fan-favorite characters from the classic comics will come to our heroes' aid as the Marvel Cinematic Universe continues to expand. So, they're not telling us nothing. I guess it's going to be a lot about Peter Quill trying to find his dad, whoever that is, Jay Son of Spartax, it's like Kurt Russell. And as far as new fan-favorite characters, maybe we see Beta Ray Bill or some weird alien species?
Beta Ray Bill, maybe
what else can we see?
Adam Warlock?
Adam Warlock and that whole like family of cosmic entities there.
How about Nova?
I hope they do Nova because they got the Nova Corps, and then that could lead into an awesome Nova movie. Who old foes become new allies? Who's that? Like Yondu maybe is like on the side.
I'm thinking Michael Rooker's character has got to become an ally. Right?
Yondu,
hey Yondu, how you doing?
I actually really liked was Karen Gillian's character,
Nebula.
She, every time she was on screen, it always caught me.
Maybe Nebula helps him out because she's sisters with what's her face?
Yep, with
Gamora.
Gamora. So they would have a reason to. She would have a reason to switch over. Doctor Strange synopsis. We kind of already know this. This is stupid. Why am I reading this? Marvel's Doctor Strange follows the story of the talented neurosurgeon Doctor Strange. Stephen Strange, who after a tragic car accident must put ego aside and learn the secrets of a hidden world of mysticism and alternate dimensions. Based in New York City's Greenwich Village, Dr. Strange must act as an intermediary between the real world and what lies beyond, utilizing a vast array of metaphysical abilities and artifacts to protect the Marvel Cinematic Universe, basically telling us nothing.
Lame.
That's interesting.
But there's your synopses now. I got a whole bunch of Spider-Man news, guys. Spider-Man Homecoming casting news and shit just kept breaking. Let's run through this.
Whoa, these are a lot of kids.
First, they added a bunch of kids. Yeah, a bunch of, like, unknown, really young high school kids. 14-year-old.
Do we have to name them? Like,
no.
Nobody knows
them.
Who they are.
They're a bunch of kids.
They hired a lot of kids.
We're going to skip past the kids. There's a bunch
like
of kids.
Everybody that was on Disney Channel is now in this movie.
Pretty much. Right? Everyone that Zendaya knows that she brought over. So we got a bunch of set photos. And again, the set photos aren't very exciting. You see Zendaya. You see Kenneth Choi as the principal. You see Steve Martin Starr. What I do kind of like is the logo on one of the shirts. Peter goes to Midtown School of Science and Technology. So it's not just Midtown High. It's like a preppy, sciencey advanced school. But
it's a science.
Yeah, but it's just them walking around. Not too exciting. Here's what's exciting. Hannibal Buress cast in Spider-Man.
Hannibal Buress.
Hannibal Buress most recently made famous. Why? Because he's the one who brought up the Bill Cosby rape shit in his act and started this whole investigation. Basically, in his stand-up was like, yo, Bill Cosby's a rapist. Look it up. And like, you people forget. And that started the whole Bill Cosby shitstorm. But he's hilarious. I saw him when I went to see Louis C.K. He opened for Louis downtown, and he's so funny. He's probably playing like
a teacher. He's got a fantastic name.
One of the best.
I know, he's got a great name.
One of the best thing uses of Hannibal Buress.
Yeah,
is there's a show on Adult Swim called the Eric Andre Show.
Ah,
you ever see this thing? Yeah. That's gonna be my recommendation.
Okay,
you gotta watch this show.
All right,
at least once.
Tell us about that at the end. But yeah, he was on 30 Rock, Eric Andre Show, and stand-up comic Hannibal Buress. I love the casting. Also, another casting, Michael Mando rumored to be cast.
This one is very weird for me.
Yeah, this one's very strange. So Michael Mando is on Better Call Saul, and he's also on Orphan Black. He always plays like a bad guy, like a gangster-type fellow. But they're rumoring that he may be playing Carnage.
Oh, shit.
There's a villain. So, okay, first of all, this is a third villain. They're rumoring a villain, right? We already have Michael Keaton possibly playing the Vulture. We already have that Logan Marshall Green guy being the Tinkerer. Now we got a third villain. This is getting to be too many villains, maybe. I don't know.
Well, the rumor is because Better Call Saul's Twitter account.
Yeah, what are they tweeting? They read Michael that
Mando,
tweet.
And they go, Michael Mando, whatever the fuck his name is spectacular at bringing Carnage to life in Better Call Saul.
Geek Booners!
Why would they use with that those term. Words? Yeah, but this is totally conjecture. It's a fucking tweet. Maybe they're fucking with us. Why are they using the word Carnage?
Carnage, yeah. And I mean, that one I question, because they're casting so many comedy acts for this and so much like kid stuff. And Carnage is just the opposite spectrum of terms of comedy and all that. Unless they go real dark comedy.
I mean, he's funny and he can pull drama, but he's also really funny in the roles he plays. But Carnage is like a psychopath, killer.
He's a killer.
How does this fit into this bright, funny high school John Hughes fucking world of Spider-Man Homecoming?
Rugboy, what do you think about
that? Is this actor Hispanic?
Yes.
Oh, so it'll be Carnage Asada.
Nailed it.
Oh, shit. Chucky nerd.
It's some guacamole. Okay, they've also, another rumor, what's this dude's name? Bokeem Woodbine.
Whoa, I can't even have a joke for that.
African-American actor Bokeem Woodbine possibly makes the fourth potential villain in this movie. What is going on?
Maybe they just go to like a cantina like in Star Wars and it's just villains just hanging out, like having drinks.
Well, this is what I'm hoping. I'm hoping it's the thing like they kind of did in the cartoon show Spectacular Spider-Man, where you're just meeting these characters and then like movies down they become the villain.
Yeah, that'd be good.
You know, just a little tease, like you just meet these guys. But this is four bad guys already, so I don't know what's going on.
That would be a lot like the comics. And that would be really cool, too, because you kind of – these guys are just spring out of nowhere. You know, they're all like kind of in the fabric of New York City.
Well, and I think this leads to the next bit of news that I wanted to get to is if they are looking at this as a universe, they're trying to build this universe, that there may be – Sony is still really into like doing a Spider-Man universe. They realized – that sharing is caring, and what they did, the reaction to Tom Holland's Spider-Man in Civil War, there was an interview with Tom Rothman, Sony Pictures chairman, with The Hollywood Reporter, and they asked him, since you team with Marvel, do you plan to make a whole Spider-Man universe? Do you have plans for more work with Marvel? And he says yes to both questions. It's been fantastic. Our relationship with Marvel. So, of course, he's going to say this shit, but basically they're saying Sony has the ultimate green light authority, but Marvel has creative lead in everything.
So it's basically like, Marvel, what do? All right, yeah, that's cool. We'll do that.
And yes, and this other part I like, they asked him, do you want to trim the costs of that franchise? He goes, I don't want to trim costs. I want to make money. Sometimes you make money by trimming costs, sometimes by investing in things that are profitable. So this opens up, there could be a Sinister Six movie. They could be setting up these guys for that. There could be a Venom movie. I just found another article that they were in the email, Sony's email hacks that one time, and possibly it's back on, a Silver Sable movie. Which is going to be hard to sell because nobody the fuck knows who Silver Sable is.
Nope. I don't know who that is.
She's hot. Rugs, describe Silver Sable real quick.
She's like a merc.
She's a merc.
She's like a gun for hire. She was in head to toe in silver like spandex.
She doesn't have powers. She just has guns.
Yeah. She's kind of like Deadpool without the cursing and the mutant abilities. She kind of like does jobs.
And occasionally she needs Spider-Man's help and he needs some extra money on the side. Doesn't always agree with their ways. But she died in the main continuity. We haven't seen her in a while in the comic book. So, but I mean, Silver Sable, that's a hard sell. It's like, who knows Silver Sable? But
that's good because you can do carte blanche with it. No one cares. You can kind of make her whatever you want.
Yeah, you can create your own. I'm excited for this Spider-Man universe, like that they're open to it, and they're letting Marvel have the creative lead. So now you'll have like a Spider-Man universe that's mixed in with the main MCU universe, but could be its own, like, Sony universe. They got this animated movie coming out next year that they said has nothing to do with the movies. It's its own thing. This also, this deal is why the PlayStation 4 game Spider-Man is exclusive to PlayStation, obviously because of Sony, and that's its own thing. And Ruggs, remember how you asked last week, we watched the trailer, you're like, is this gameplay footage? Turns out that was gameplay footage. They confirmed.
No way.
They confirmed. I got the link right here. They confirmed that that was gameplay footage. So that's pretty impressive. So
whoa.
This deal with Sony and Marvel is kind of interesting. A lot of fun things are going to pop up. I am very excited.
As you should be.
As we all should be. Finally, last Marvel news that I just popped up. This is way speculation and conjecture and way early. But on the latest episode of the Collider Heroes podcast that I listened to, they had this dude, Matt Key, on there. He's the producer of Kevin Smith's Batman on Batman. So this is like through third party. And he said he's heard from a few of his sources by the little birds that Fox and Marvel have kind of talked, but not really. But like there's interest from Fox, like, oh, you know what they did with Sony and Spider-Man is actually pretty cool. Like maybe. He says we're years away from that ever possibly happening, but I think that's what it would take, Fox joining hands with Marvel. So
you know what's going to take? More fucking shitty movies like Apocalypse.
Yeah, and Fantastic Four, that bomb. Like, yeah. Deadpool was the one fucking out of nowhere.
Just out of curiosity, I'm going to look up how much money Apocalypse has made while we...
Oh, good.
Yeah, you should do that.
Good call. In other movie news, this is...
You ready real quick?
Yeah, yeah. Hit us.
All right. Domestically right now, 150.
Ooh.
And it was production budget of 178.
Oh, shit.
But foreign, 365, so a total of 515 worldwide, which would put it... It is seventh currently in the X-Men franchise of movies.
Yeah, it's doing better internationally than it is.
Doing decent internationally. Here. It's not doing that.
Seventh.
I think this, I mean,
X-Men
that sucks.
And the, I mean, good. All the buzz, the legs are, there's no legs. The buzz is gone. Nobody really gives a shit about this movie anymore.
No.
They had some more, they released some more early concept art of Apocalypse, and it was slightly better. It still looked like shit, but it didn't have. Like the tubes in the back of his head, but it was, I don't know. I didn't like the design.
They missed the mark. They wanted to do the practical effects when they probably, in hindsight, should have just done the CGI sort of.
Yeah, you do like a Thanos thing on the guy's face.
The guy needed to be a lot bigger.
Yes. Yes. More intimidating.
But so, I think they also didn't want to waste Oscar Isaac, so they were in a stuck.
But that's why, like, you do what they do with the Brolin. Like, it looks like Brolin a little bit, but it looks like Thanos. Like, it works really good.
Yeah, but as an actor, don't you give a – like, you're getting a paycheck for doing nothing if you do the – it's the easiest job ever.
It really is. I don't think Oscar Isaac would mind.
You have to do, yeah, you don't have to be on set. You could just be in a room and do this motion capture shit.
He obviously didn't mind if he had lines like he's touching a TV and saying learning. Like,
learning.
Yeah. He was just collecting a paycheck at that point.
Learning.
Yeah.
Look, but what do you do with all – you got that line on script and you're like – are you fucking kidding me? Fuck, this is what you want me to do? Oh, shit. I'm really going to have to fucking pull out my chops for this.
Farachi's review is great where he writes about that line. He goes, oh, boy, we are fucked.
We need to make that line work. You got to add some kind of spice to it. You got to be like, what are you doing? You go, I'm learning, you fuckhead. Yeah,
that was his spice. Was the way he said it was the spice. Anywho, look, speaking of guys we would love to see cast as a villain, the Bryan Cranston. How many times have we said, "Oh, Bryan Cranston needs to get into a superhero movie"? He would have made a great Lex Luthor. Now we live in a world where that role is wasted on Jesse Eisenberg, and Bryan Cranston is cast as fucking Zordon in the Power Rangers movie.
Oh, shit.
What the fuck is going on here, people?
That's a paycheck to collect right there.
This should have been flipped. Now, you talk about movies that don't have to do anything. All they need to do is film his blue head in the middle of the thing as Zordon.
Just go in the closet and hold a flashlight under your face, and then talk.
He could film this on his iPhone and email it to them and make $10 million. But what the goddamn fuck is Bryan Cranston doing as Zordon? Why? He should have been Luthor. Plus, Anthony Hopkins is in the newest Transformers movie. The world is upside down. Now, he's also been Odin in Marvel, but that is way better just artistically than any fucking Transformers piece of shit.
So my friend Irwin, we have this group me where it's like we discuss movies. It's me, Irwin, Rex, two guys have been on the show, Chris Sotelo, so three guys have been on the show.
Yeah, right on.
And he sends us a group me a message where he goes, Bryan Cranston has been cast as Commissioner Gordon. And we were like, what? And then he goes, oh my God, I'm sorry. I meant Zordon. And we were like, what?
Sort of. That's even a bigger, like, what?
I was like, oh my God. We've just been trolled.
Commissioner
Zordon. Holy shit.
Zordon, though. Oh my God.
Commissioner Zordon. Yeah, you guys, do you millennials know? You watch Power Rangers? He's a floating fucking glitch head.
I know who he is. He's Casper. He's basically Casper in human form.
Why? Oh, he made such a good Lex Luthor, dude. Holy shit.
Paychecks must be real good.
He must need some work. They killed him off Godzilla, and now he's Zordon. Okay, yeah.
Do you think that Power Rangers, is there any chance, percentage-wise? What percentage-wise do you think this movie
It'll be as good as the first Ninja Turtle reboot one.
Okay. Yeah, if it hits that mark, then I guess it's all right.
What if they go, like, full camp? Like, they're not going to take it serious. Are they trying to make it a serious
take? That's what I heard, that they're trying to make it a little more serious. I mean, you got Bryan Cranston doing Zordon. Either that's camp or it's one or the other, right?
You know,
I don't think it's going to be serious. I think it's going to be – they're going to try and make it seem like Avengers. That's what they're going to try and hit that kind of mark.
I mean, do they do the tone like that fan film with Vanderbeek and what's her name from Battlestar Galactica that was the Power Rangers? Try to do that.
No one wants that.
No, yeah, there's no – that's a very dark section of society that wants that.
it'll be interesting to see where do they go with the Power Rangers.
Hey, listen, I'll tell you exactly how to do it.
Okay, go. Hold on.
Here's the rundown.
With the exception of the last episode, they should just go to Voltron on Netflix and say, this is how you do a show about robots and shit that fly around. And that's that.
Wait, a Voltron?
Yeah, the Voltron series on Netflix.
I watched most of it. It leaves you on a weird cliffhanger.
Yeah, the ending is terrible. I mean, there is so much cool shit in that thing.
Dude, it's really good. Like, how funny is Hunk? Dude, Hunk is hilarious. The comedic timing in the writing and it's a continuing story arc. I really enjoyed the Voltron.
What you do. Like, Voltron preceded Power Rangers. Yes. It was like the archetype for like robots that get together and form a big robot and they fight some bigger thing, you know, other than Ultraman or some shit like that. The first time it's done in a cartoon form.
Yeah. And it's a good call, Ruggs. They should really take a look at that.
But that tone is great. It's kind of like fun. Yeah. It's lighthearted.
Yeah.
But there's still like the stakes are pretty high and people fucking die. And
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. No, it's really well done. Really well animated. My favorite Hunk is literally, dude, this Voltron has genuine laughs, like really good laughs. My favorite is Hunk when they first form Voltron. Hunk goes, I'm a leg. He's like the leg, and he just goes, I'm a leg. And they're flying out. It's so good. Like, it's really, really well done. All right, let's get to some Star Wars news. Got a couple of bits. We have finally confirmation. Darth Vader is in Rogue One. James Earl Jones confirmed as the voice of Darth Vader. So we knew that was going to happen. But this is interesting because along with this movie had reshoots, that it possibly there's a cut that's a war movie that we're never going to see. Now, we thought it was going to be a complete separate thing, but Darth Vader is in it. So they're tying it more into the tone of Star Wars. It's very interesting. There was more information about character names and who they are and who Forrest Whitaker is. I don't know if you guys are interested. We can go over that. But there was a bunch of images that were from EW.com that were really cool. And it's in this link here. And I just want to know what you guys think about these images.
All the suits got together. They're like, make it more Star Warsy.
That's basically it. Sounds like what it's gonna be is they want to make it more Star Warsy. But I love there's a shot of stormtroopers walking through the water on the beach.
That's cool.
Which is very cool. And now look at the shot of there's these Death Troopers. They're in black.
Oh whoa!
Look at what he's holding in his hand.
An action figure.
He's holding like a kid's stormtrooper doll. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
So Ruggs, one of the things that came out was Forrest Whitaker is playing this character that was in the Clone Wars series that fought alongside Anakin, and he's like on the fringe of the Rebel Alliance, and he's badass. So basically, that confirms that the Clone Wars is tied into this universe now.
Whoa.
For a movie that's called Star Wars, it seems like it's filmed on a beach.
There's a lot of beach shots. They're like, look, the AT-ATs, fuck that. Well, look, Empire had the snow, was like the snow movie. Right. This is going to be your beach, tropical. There's palm trees and shit. There's a, they're drinking out of coconuts. I don't know. Do you guys want to know about some of the characters? Who they are? What
I
mean, their names are?
I don't care personally because I just don't know who they are.
But so Forrest Whitaker is Saw Gerrera is Forrest Whitaker's character's name. They land on Waterworld. It kind of looks like Homeworld Art says there's a lot of water. Like there's a they're walking in the water. Ruggs, who do you want to know about?
I don't know. I really don't know anything about this movie, and I don't want to know about it because I want to just go in blind. But
all right.
Go ahead.
No, I'll give you one. Let's just do Felicity Jones.
Okay.
Her name is Jyn Erso. She's a streetwise delinquent who has been on her own since 15. She has fighting skills and a knowledge of the galactic underworld that the Rebel Alliance desperately needs. She's got a checkered past. She's been detained by the Rebellion and has been given an opportunity to be useful. And by being useful, it may commute her sentence. She's a real survivor. She kind of becomes a Joan of Arc in the story. So basically, a lot of these characters, they have these relationships. It sounds really cool what the story is going to be based on these character descriptions. Alan Tudyk plays a robot. He plays an android, K2SO, who's like the antithesis of C-3PO.
He doesn't like a cool robot.
Yeah, he's like a badass robot. This robot, he's tough, he's confident, he doesn't care about human-cyborg relations. He's the opposite of the neurotic C-3PO. They said that K2, they call him K2, is a little bit like Chewbacca's personality in a droid's body. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Anyways, you guys, check out the link in the show notes for more. There's tons of character descriptions. This movie's coming out December, so that'll be good. And finally, I have a piece of Godzilla news before we get to some TV news.
A little tiny piece.
Little tiny piece. Check out this link because right here in toy form is going to be like one of your best looks of Godzilla.
This is the Monster Arts figures.
This is, Tamashii Nation's Monster Arts spinoff, highly articulated figure arts line, Shin Godzilla. It's 7 inches tall. Has a ton of articulation. It's got a wide, creepy opening jaw, gnarled and bloated appendages all the way to its ridiculously lengthy tail.
Yep.
So you can pose it. Now, look at the end of this tail. There's like this red shit at the end of it.
There's bones sticking out of it.
It's all red and damaged. So the rumor is that the tail's actually home to some weird alien parasite driving Godzilla into his rampage. So this thing on his tail.
Are you serious? That's bullshit.
That's what the rumor is. There's a thing in his tail that's making him go crazy.
Oh, shit.
Lame.
You don't like that? You don't like that? You don't like that?
Not really.
I mean, I dig. His hips don't seem as big as in the photo.
Yeah, the way they've articulated this character or the toy, it makes it look a lot more dynamic. But I mean, I can still see hints of how big his fucking hips are.
I like how his wide open mouth.
Well, as an owner of these Monster Arts figures, they're like the coolest figures you can buy.
Oh, they are.
Yeah. They're like about $100, or sometimes you can get them for $50, depending on if they've come out and no one gives a shit about them, if they're hot tickets.
It's like the Hot Toys version, Japanese Hot Toys.
Yeah, I own a bunch of these.
Oh, right.
And
so
I've been giving them
this one
my people
will cost you 12,960 yen.
Oh, shit.
Which comes out to $126. Ruggs, what'd you get this for $126?
Yeah, I'll buy it.
It's pretty sick to play with it and pose it and stuff.
Well, yeah. But the thing is these figures are really good. They're very well painted. They're very poseable. And they look great. They look just like the costumes. The one thing is that they have a lot of these for articulation sake.
Yeah.
They have like these big cuts in the middle of
them. Yeah, you see that a lot in his neck, so you can move it around.
Yeah. But other than that, it's pretty true to the thing. I don't know. I mean, we've got to see this movie. I got to see what it's like. This figure looks cool, though.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about this alien in his tail. That doesn't make any sense.
There's an alien in his tail that's giving him a headache, and then Godzilla just has to smash shit because he's on a rag or something. I don't know what the fuck's happening. All right, that's it for the movie news, gang. I got a bunch of television Saul small screen comic book news. Let's get to that.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
In an age of steam and gears, of monstrous machines and greedy corporations, in a world of automatons and dirigibles and faster-than-sound sky trains, in a time out of time, where the Americas weathered multiple civil wars, where armies continue to watch from the brink of the next conflict. It is a reality where witches and ghouls live among thinking machines and walking machines that resemble humans. It's a role-playing game. It's a dramatic radio adventure. It's a comedy. It's the Steamrollers Adventure Podcast, available on iTunes or at rigstories.com.
Are you afraid of what goes bump in the night?
Have you or your friends ever pondered a conspiracy?
Do you want to know more about the unknown?
If so, then put on your tinfoil hat, sit down, and pick up your computer, tablet, or phone. Go to iTunes or YouTube and search for Secret Transmission Podcast and listen to us try to explain the unexplainable.
Follow us on Twitter for updates on shows.
At Secret Trans Pod. That's SecretTransPod.
Or you can email us suggestions
at secrettransmission@hotmail.com. That's SecretTransmission@hotmail.com.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
Okay, I got a bunch of shit about Netflix. A lot of interesting. This isn't the Netflix podcast, but look, if you subscribe to Netflix, you know that you got your Daredevils on there, your Jessica Jones. They just made an exclusive deal with Disney. So in the future, every Disney, Pixar, Star Wars, fucking superhero Marvel movie, it's going to go from the theater to DVD right to Netflix.
Wow.
Yes. Now, they got a new logo also. Have you seen the new logo?
I'm looking at it right now.
It is, let's see if I can get this to work in here. It is, it's a folded ribbon design. What we call in the design logo circles, it's pretty much it's an N with that looks like it's folded on side on a ribbon. It's not bad.
It's very,
that's the new
holiday.
Logo.
Holiday?
What do you mean?
I like Christmas? Like it's very or any sort of present.
Yeah, the ribbon reminds you of the present. It's got just a subtle like arced cut on the bottom, which kind of mimics the way the old logo, the words were, where it was like a little arc on the bottom. Anywho. Netflix has a another exclusive deal with the CW shows now.
Oh, shit.
New episodes of CW shows will no longer be released on Hulu because they have signed a deal with Netflix. Now, this is good and bad. Ruggs, what are your thoughts on this initially?
So Netflix has everything now.
Netflix is all your one-stop geek superhero media, man, from your Marvel Studios productions to all the CW shows. This is great. So here's what's going to happen. When the season ends, 2 weeks later, that whole season will show up on Netflix. Now, this sucks for one reason for Hulu viewers, because up until now, if you had Hulu, you could catch the show the next day after it aired. It was up on Hulu.
Yeah.
You didn't have to wait. But now, if you want to catch the show as it airs, you have to DVR it. You got to go on demand. That's the only place the CW shows are going to show up. Or you wait till the season ends. 2 weeks later, the whole season shows up and you binge through it. Anthony, what do you think, man? Netflix has everything now.
They do. I don't know if Blab just kicked me off. I'm sorry.
Blab's being a fucking dick.
Yeah, Blab is a dick. Blab prefers Richard, though, just for future.
Mind comments. If I call you a dick? You got to know Blab really well.
No, the Hulu thing, I think that's big just because now you have to either watch, like you said, DVR or
watch it live.
Pushing people to go on demand, yeah. Like if you have Comcast or something like that. The Hulu thing is going to, I would assume that would piss people off.
Yeah, right? I feel bad.
Like a step backwards.
Yeah.
Well, so this is all, I got two more really pieces.
Yeah, it almost seems like you would be cutting into your audience by doing
like
something
you're cannibalizing
that.
Your own shit.
I would assume you'd want to keep it the same format where you're on Hulu and you do Netflix.
No, but Netflix
later.
Wants exclusive. Netflix right. is being a bully. They're like, no, it's us or nothing, motherfuckers. You can't have this shit everywhere. Now, there's two more pieces of Netflix information that's very interesting. So now we know that. They got to deal with Netflix. But they are anticipating 500,000 people will cancel their subscriptions. Why? Because they are increasing their streaming price to $9.99 per month. For the HD streaming package.
Oh, shit.
I guess that's up like $2? $1?
It depends what you – I think it's a dollar.
So they predict that price increase could result in an estimated 480,000 subscribers canceling
Cheapskate,
their services.
That we call them.
The hike in prices will likely lead to about $520 million in additional revenue. Okay, so that's one thing. Then they're doing this other thing. They're going to allow you to download media for offline streaming.
That's a first for them, right?
That is a first for – this is Netflix is known as the streaming service. There's always been streaming. But in an effort to remain the world's largest streaming service, they are going to let you download content. Here's the irony. The price increase will be in effect this year, even though there's 40% less content on Netflix than there was 4 years ago.
Oh, shit. Whoa.
But let me just argue for the price increase. Not that I like paying more money for things, but if they're going to let you download stuff,
yes,
that's a lot more value than they used to let you have. Now you can go and download a bunch of shit and go on a plane and watch it all.
Absolutely. So
that's amazing.
Will this cancel each other out? On the one hand, they're raising prices. Got to piss people off. People be like, fuck this, I'm out. On the other hand, they have exclusive Marvel, Disney, Star Wars.
I think they're not going to push that. They're going to push that, but the big angle is the download. I would pay a dollar more if I could download.
And the download. Exclusive CW shows, and you can download. So this is going to be – I'm not going to – they could raise it. I'm not going to cancel. You got to have the Netflix now. They got fucking everything. They just pulled this deal. And primarily for the Marvel properties that we are dying to see out.
I think that was one of the advantages Amazon Prime had, was it? Is that Amazon Prime that they're in competition?
Yeah. That's a streaming.
That Amazon Prime, you could download their
stuff.
They
have a lot of original programming. Yeah. So they'll see who leaves. $9.99 is not enough to make me leave.
No.
I'm fine.
So, like you said, if you throw in the download, then you're good.
What's the cost that will make you leave? $12?
Now, if it gets to shit.
If it approaches anywhere near $15, that's too much.
There's a lot of studies that when you get past that $10, like if you leave it at $9.99, people are happy. But for some reason in your brain, when you hit double digits, $10, you're like, no, I can't.
So $10 or $20, it doesn't matter. It's more than one digit.
It's a psychological aspect of paying less than $10.
Yeah,
or something.
That's interesting. That's a good point. And it's kind of like it's subtle enough to – you may not even notice this extra charge now on your Netflix, you know. I mean, they'll let you know, but it's still – what is it, another $2? And it's still under $10.
I think it's a dollar more. I haven't looked at my bill, but yeah, I think it's a dollar more than I'm paying. If it is, it's just $12 more.
I would do 12. I'd go as high as 12, maybe. I don't know.
It's easy 12. To justify like $100 a year in entertainment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know,
especially when you look at cable bills and you're like, shit, I'm paying that a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if it creeps up, like you can get cable for like, let's say, $30 a month, like just the basic shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, and then you can now subscribe to like the streaming cable. If you really want your Game of Thrones, you just get the HBO Go. I think it's cheaper, and it's streaming. So Netflix is going to have some interesting stuff. They're making some interesting moves. All right, in the DC TV universe, Grant Gustin has revealed the title of the first episode of Season 3 of Flash. It's Flashpoint, people. They're doing Flashpoint. The title of the episode is Flashpoint. There's no beating around the bush anymore.
So he's going to go back in time again?
No. What? So
He might.
If that's the title, it should, wherever it starts, everything is now changed. If you've read the Flashpoint comic book, you know that he saves his mom, he comes back, everything's different. Bruce Wayne gets shot. Thomas Wayne is Batman. Martha Wayne is the Joker. The world's topsy-turvy, and he's got to go back and fucking undo it to get back to where things were. So
we're going
to
start off in a whole alternate reality then.
It could be probably completely different. Also, Jesse,
what's crazy, though, about Flashpoint is, for the people that haven't read it, like you mentioned all the Batman stuff. Yeah. I don't know if they're even going to be
able to touch.
They're
never going to do that. But
there was also a huge Amazon versus Atlantean war, and like both Aquaman and Wonder Woman were both like these narcissistic, like czar type leaders, where they were just dictators and controlling everything. None of that material they're going to be able to use. They haven't mined any of that.
But really, why can't you do Thomas Wayne Batman? Because look, it's not Bruce Wayne. It's not even this main universe that they're doing in the movies, Batman. It could be its own thing for the Flash show. But they've never acknowledged a Batman in the universe, I guess.
The only acknowledgement I've seen of Batman is, I think, on the Flash's phone in that one scene where he's on Earth 2, where it was like,
oh, it says Clark, Dick, Bruce, Hal.
Yeah. I think they put Earth Bruce 2 on there.
Yeah, there's no Arkham. There's no, God damn it, they can't do that. That'd be awesome. Somebody had done, like, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who played Thomas Wayne, BVS. They did fan art him as Batman in Flashpoint, and it looked pretty dope. I was like, oh, that would be sick, but they're not, there's no way they're going to do that.
He's too busy being Negan, man.
He's too busy. Oh, I have some news about that. We'll get to that fucking Negan news.
Negan!
Arrow, what's up, Negan? Arrow season 5.
Yo, Negan, right? Please.
That's my Negan right there. That's my Negan. Arrow season 5. Remember Evelyn Sharp, everybody, at the end of last season of Arrow? She briefly took over Black Canary and tried to kill the mayor, and then she took off, and we're like, that was odd. She's coming back. She's going to be playing Artemis.
Geek Booner.
Oh.
Fucking Artemis is going to be in Arrow season 5. She's going to come back as an archer. Now, this is going to be a different Artemis, of course.
We need more archers. This show needs a lot more archers.
Of course they need. Look, last week we talked about how they're adding vigilantes. They're adding Wild Dog. They're adding a dude whose name is the Vigilante. Like, how much more straightforward can he be with your names, DC? What's your name? Vigilante. What do you do? Vigilante. Okay. But they're adding Evelyn Sharp, Madison McLaughlin, who replies her role as Evelyn Sharp as Artemis. So, Anthony, tell us about Artemis in Young Justice. There's a couple of interesting things they could do with this character.
I'm kind of foggy on who Artemis. I know who she was, but I don't know her backstory. She was like an apprentice of Green Arrow and kind of Speedy.
Yeah, Roy Harper.
In Young Justice, and she had a little romance thing with Wally West Flash.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
She was a double agent.
Yeah, and she was the daughter of villain Sportmaster and Tigress.
Oh,
so
that's right.
She's a daughter. She's a villain daughter from Villains.
She's sisters with Tigress, I think. Her half-sisters.
Yeah, so the comic books and the Young Justice are kind of different. But yeah, she became Green Arrow psychic after Roy Harper, Speedy, went solo. So they got a lot to play with. That's kind of fun. They really need to fix that next season of Arrow. I like this whole vigilante angle. And Stephen Amell says they're also going to change the costume again for season 5 a little bit, so you'll get an updated
They need to have him grow out his goatee like that fucking 70s Green Arrow.
That would be awesome. Yeah. I'd be down with the goatee Arrow.
His mustache.
But then, wait, nobody knows he's the Arrow again, right, on the show? I can't remember. They don't know. Like, the city doesn't know.
Oh, I don't think the city knows that he's the Arrow. They just know that the Green Arrow's around.
The Felder City. So this was a rumor we had talked about before, but confirmed, I love this, Linda Carter cast as the President of the United States Supergirl Season 2 on CW. How much fun is that? That's going to be great. We're going to get Superman, you're going to get the old Wonder Woman. Again, Berlanti is great with bringing these people back, with John Wesley Shipp getting to put a Flash costume on at the end of Season 2 of Flash. I love this shit.
All they need to do is cast what, Tom Wellington in something, and fangirls will go crazy.
Yeah, you gotta get Tom Welling as like maybe alternate older universe Superman, something Earth 4 Superman. So far, they've
Bizarro,
been
Bizarro, maybe like a Bizarro.
Oh, Tom Welling as Bizarro Superman would actually be kind of cool, because they did Bizarro Supergirl.
What if he's Jor-El?
He could be Jor-El, yeah,
that'd be cool too.
He could be an
L. They do a good job, Berlanti, of acknowledging the past TV shows.
It's fun, man.
Incorporating them.
And some of this fun seems to be leaking into the Justice League movie, as we discussed earlier. Finally, Gotham. Remember we said they're going to recast Gotham? Well, we got a new Poison Ivy. Sorry, they're going to recast Poison Ivy on Gotham?
Yeah, I was going to recast Gotham. Yeah,
we've just recast all of Gotham.
The entire show?
Look, if you know any of the Batman movies, you could just recast the whole show. That's what they did movie from movie. Maggie Gyllenhaal, who's actually really cute, redhead, will be playing Poison Ivy, a lot older and a lot more like a sexier character.
That's not bad casting.
Not bad at all.
She's 28, but they're having her play a 19-year-old.
19-year-old, this is so Gotham. The sudden age jump comes, quote, following an encounter with a monster from Indian Hill, which finds her reborn. Now the character's older and one step closer to the DC villain. Problem solved, everyone. Well done, Gotham.
That is so ridiculous.
Holy shit. How Gotham is that? That is so fucking Gotham.
I don't even know like why they needed it. They could have just been like, oh, this is another Poison Ivy. Like, fuck it. But they had to like acknowledge that she met someone and immediately aged into this hot woman.
You literally could have just introduced her, not said anything, and nobody would have fucking blinked. They'd be like, oh, it's Poison Ivy now. Sure. So she grew up over the summer. She must have hit puberty. I don't know what happened. But she looks the part, though. All right. So let's move. Well, we were talking about Negan. And what's Negan? So Walking Dead, as we know where it left off, Negan killed the motherfucker, but we didn't know who they killed. Well, guess what? They really want this to be tight-lipped. They filmed 11 death scenes. They filmed a death scene with every character. That way, nobody can bust.
What a bunch of dicks.
Who actually dies. So even the cast has no clue. They filmed the death scene with every character, people.
What a waste of time and money.
Yeah, what are you doing? And then what are you going to do with that footage? Just so, like, you don't get busted on the internet these days? What are you guys' thoughts about this? It's ridiculous.
It's the old switcheroo thing. They want to be prepared.
Yeah, you know? They're fighting against information leaks and all that stuff. They're actively like trying to control the narrative.
That's pretty funny.
It's amusing that they did that. This all could have been solved though if they would have just left the cliffhanger.
Yeah, it's unnecessary.
Yeah, showed it to us.
Had you just showed us to begin with. You didn't have to waste all this fucking time and resources filming 11 deaths. Are you fucking kidding me? Really?
No one cares that much, guys.
No, they really don't.
We know they're going to die.
I got to be honest. It's what, June 25th when we're recording this?
Yeah.
That cliffhanger scene, I haven't thought about that since it happened. No, so that's how much of an effect it's had on me.
Because that conversation of, oh, who do you think died, is fun for 2 minutes. And then you don't give a fuck.
We already did that.
Yes.
Right. With Glenn already.
It's fun for the week, and then you move on. You don't. Yes. It's not something I'm talking about all
for
summer.
The summer. Yeah, and the fact that you did that with Glenn ruined any kind of goodwill you're going to get from us as viewers, Walking Dead. So you better come back with a fucking strong-ass sixth season or
six
seventh
or
whatever.
Seven. I don't know.
Oh, season seven.
Oh, my God. It's too many.
Season seven. Okay, speaking of too many rugs, you're going to love this next one. We're going to move into some comic book news. They've been teasing for a little bit this storyline in Spider-Man comics called Dead No More, where Dan Slott's been dropping hints of a certain character coming back from the dead, possibly. It's been very mysterious. And if you read Amazing Spider-Man, you see this guy in a red jacket and his face is in shadow. And nobody knew who it was. Is it Norman Osborn? Is it this guy? Who's pulling the strings? And then they bring Rhino back. Rhino was dead and then came back. So it's come out now, after months, the Dead No More, the real title of the Dead No More is this. The Clone Conspiracy!
Oh, shit.
They're bringing a new clone saga. Dan Slott is writing a new clone saga. This is all, and I kind of missed this. On Free Comic Book Day, there was a Spider-Man edition where Gwen Stacy clone shows up. So, the character coming back, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, is the Jackal. Of course, we're talking about clones. We're talking about the Jackal. The Jackal's still alive. Now, here's where, so there's a couple of things. Like, if you know the 90s comic books, the clone shit went out of control. destroyed my any love I had for Spider-Man. It literally made me stop reading comic books because it was ridiculous. But
I think Rugboy just passed out.
Rugboy passed out at this news. Here's why I have. And if you listen to our episode with Todd DeZago, who was to write Spectacular Spider-Man, great episode, by the way. He was writing there at the time, and he told us that the Clone Saga was supposed to be 4 issues. They had planned a 4-issue story arc and done. Of course, that's not what happened. Now, Dan Slott's been planning this shit for months. This is going to be a standalone 5-issue miniseries written by Slott and illustrated by Jim Chung, who's an awesome illustrator, draws great Spider-Man. First issue hitting stands in October. It's going to be led up from with a lead up from Amazing Spider-Man 16 through 18. So this is not going to be a big crazy thing that gets out of control. It's a 5-issue limited series called The Clone Conspiracy. Rugboy, comment.
Dan Slott, I'll pass. That's all you need to know. Dan Slott sucks. That's all.
He's passionate about Spider-Man, though.
I don't give a shit.
He is invested.
Like,
he is invested in this character. He's been writing
Spider-Man
it for years.
Since I was born.
I know, but this motherfucker has been setting up things for hundreds of issues by now.
Yeah, but all of his things are garbage.
I love Spidey-Ock.
You like Spidey-Ock?
I love Superior Spider-Man.
Okay, that's okay. I mean, that was cool, but whatever. But I think he dips into that well way too many times.
Okay.
I have yet to read a Spider-Man from Dan Slott and been like, I like that. Never. Not once. I don't like the way he writes.
You don't like the way he writes Spider-Man. Some of it,
I mean, some of it is
better than others.
I'll take Bendis any day, DeMatteis any day. There's so many writers that I would take way before Slott ever touches this shit.
And he's not going anywhere. Speaking of Bendis, I wanted to mention the set photos from Spider-Man Homecoming, really evocative of panels from Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man, you know, with him with the backpack and the hair and kind of the colors. Like, it gave me it felt like Ultimate Spider-Man book from Bendis. So that's not bad. I like that.
I have no comment because I just don't read this. So. I didn't read the Clone Saga either. So
and
I just know.
Yeah, you did. You know what's interesting is a lot of cats are they're reading the Clone Saga now and catching up to it. And I've seen people tweet that like, it's not completely horrible. It does fall apart towards the end when they start calling it Maximum Clonage. It's really bad. It's really bad. But the beginning of it, I gotta say, was exciting because you're like, oh shit, they bring in fucking the clones back from the 70s and Gwen Stacy, and then it went off the rails. They didn't listen to Todd DeZago. They should have kept it to 4 issues. But they were like, look at people like this. Let's make fucking 200 million.
I don't know. I just think, why can't you just move on? Okay, like, for example, like Gwen Stacy being brought back, and then, you know, all these characters, oh, then there's like one clone, then there's two clones, then there's three clones, and then there's clones on top of clones, and there's too many clones. It's like, why not just keep it simple and streamlined? Why can't you just make a good story out of something simple? Why do you have to keep throwing more and more shit?
There was also talk of how this may retcon the One More Day storyline and reverse that.
Fuck. Like, it's too late. They fucked Spider-Man up so much. A guy who read Spider-Man since he was 7 years old, or old enough to read. Okay, I mean, I would have Spider-Man dolls at that time.
Yeah,
Spider-Man figures. I was a Spider-Man fan.
They
fucked me over. All right, I'm sorry.
I understand where you're coming from because I am the same exact fan, but I'm still with it just because I need to read something Spider-Man. I want to know what's going on.
And
This is what they got.
Read Spidey. It's one shot, simple story.
It's not too kiddie, though. That seemed to be a little bit too simple.
Yeah, I mean, it's still more enjoyable than reading Dan Slott, though.
I don't know. There's shit going on. Lots of shit sometimes. There's issues of Superior Spider-Man that were packed to the gills with shit. Like, so much plot development in 1 second was crazy.
That's not what I'm saying. I think Dan Slott, I'm not saying that he didn't have a lot of plot going on.
Yeah.
It's just the most convoluted, it's like not well, it's always half baked. Everything that he does is like not fully baked. Like, he doesn't really, he just throws everything in the kitchen sink at you. And then on top of that, the flow of the comic book, it's like work getting through the issues. It's like you're trudging through them.
Sometimes it's a lot of words.
I got to say my favorite part of this little mini debate is Imran going, there's a ton of plot in it, though. And Rug Boy's response is, no.
No. That's not a good, not a good thing to say.
I'll agree. It's wordy. It's wordy. Sometimes there's a lot of words. Bendis is a lot better with dialogue. It's more streamlined. It's more natural, conversational. And Slott is just like, there's a lot of exposition.
I've read a lot of opinions on it. Slott, you either really are enjoying this ride or you're like Rug Boy and you're like, he's fucking full of
fuck
shit
this guy.
So much.
He's horseshit. He's full of shit.
Fuck this guy. Okay.
He's very polarizing and he's a Spider-Man writing.
I don't care.
Let's get to the last piece of news before we get to our recommendations. You guys, there was going to be plans. George Lucas, 2 years ago, had made plans to build a George Lucas Star Wars Museum. Basically, it was a Lucas Museum that just was going to have all his memorabilia from movies. And there was designs for it. It looked beautiful, very exciting. It was going to be going on the lakefront next to Soldier Field on museum campus where there is currently a parking lot. All right. Now, there's tons of museums over there. There's the Adler Planetarium. There's the Shedd Aquarium. There's the Field Museum.
Very beautiful part of Chicago.
Very beautiful part of Chicago. The issue being the lakefront has always been protected, always been guarded. People, there's groups and lobbyists, they do not want privately funded shit on the lakefront. The reason it's beautiful right now is because these people have been protecting the shit since the turn of the century. So this organization, Friends of the Park, now Rahm Emanuel, the mayor, wanted this. This museum was going to provide jobs and, of course, the tourism and $1.5 billion building here. This organization, Friends of the Park, kind of bullied the Lucas people, and they were trying to extort them for tax things and other things. Basically, Lucas is like, you know what? I'm out. He's not building the museum. He's moving back to California. Now, there's two sides to the story. That's the thing, is this would have been a great world-class institute for the city that people would have came from. However, it seems like Lucas did not want to build this bad enough to put it just they recommended other parts, other locations that weren't on the lakefront. Lucas's heart was set on the lakefront. So as badly as he wanted to build this museum in Chicago, he didn't want to build it bad enough that he just wouldn't put it somewhere else.
I got to say, I heard about this yesterday.
Yeah.
And I must have either been living under a rock or I just don't care at all about Star Wars because I didn't even know this was a thing until yesterday. And this has apparently been a thing for 2 years.
2 years. And, you know, there's articles.
Why would it be in Chicago in the first place?
His wife is from Chicago. He's not from Chicago. They visited and he fell in love with the lakefront. Listen, our lakefront is incomparable, second to none. You could go to places around the city around the world. And the quality of how clean it is and how beautiful it is holds up anywhere. They've done an amazing job. And this is over 100 years of these parks people protecting it. Now, critics of this have called Friends of the Park gangsters and high-rises. They've called them thugs. But Friends of the Park is like, look, we don't want a private institution because if we let it open to you, who's next to come in here? Now, they made really good suggestions, like near McCormick Place and other locations, but he really wanted the lakefront. And so we've lost this. It's not going to be built here. I don't know. It's kind of like a win and lose. It's really weird. Disney, David Mobley has a question. Doesn't Disney own all that stuff? I believe they own, that's a good question. I think it's like his private collection that they don't own.
Yeah, I don't know what he had to have some sort of thing written into the deal where he can still do stuff or so. I don't know.
So basically politics and Emmanuel's politics. Not happy and, but,
I say fuck Chicago. That's what I say.
Like if it's
bring it over to New York, we'll take that shit.
He's moving it to California.
He's moving it to California. Well, they started in San Francisco, and that what fell through. And then he came to Chicago. This fell through. I mean, I'm all for protecting our lakefront. It's great, but fuck, this museum would have been goddamn cool. Because the museum campus down there is amazing. There's great museums. People come to the city.
It's cool. That museum campus is cool, but it's also not cool in the same sense that it's like a lot of old shit that like us millennials don't care about anymore. Like, have you walked in the Field Museum lately?
No, I agree. Anymore. This how
Adler
exciting
Planetarium is not that cool anymore. The only thing that's cool down there is a shed aquarium.
But how exciting would have been to get this new modern museum structure? This Lucas, I think it would have millennials would have.
Wait a minute! This is the most weird thing I've ever heard. A museum has old shit in it. David, isn't it supposed to have old shit? That's why it's a museum.
David, yeah, but it's not like I don't know. It's
not sexy enough for you.
I walk into the Field Museum and it feels like I'm back in like it hasn't aged at all. They haven't done anything like new with it.
What is this? Bones?
I'm still looking at taxidermy shit.
There's still stuffed fucking animals. I mean, that's the Field Museum. The Museum of Science and Industry is a lot of fun, and they have great.
I've been to that one in a while,
dude. They have great exhibits. David Bubbly says they are worried that one day there might be a rug boy museum. Okay, that's a good concern.
Yeah, you fit that in a shoebox.
You open it, it's just like a bunch of cotton on the floor. It's one exhibit.
Yeah, it's just stuffing.
And then Mobley asked, isn't Chicago now the crime capital of America? I don't know, because I live in Canada. Yeah, you're about right. We got the highest shootings of the weekend. Number one, Chicago, number one.
Are we still?
Probably. I mean, Memorial Day weekend was crazy. Like,
there's a misconception. Like, it's like anywhere. You go to the wrong part of a city and you're in trouble, but...
So, yeah. So that's basically the Friends of the Park stopped them from tearing down a... parking lot. That's the other thing is right now there's just a fucking parking lot there. It's not being even used for anything really that good.
Wherever that place goes, it'll draw people apparently, right?
This is the same town where Daly, Mayor Daly, in the middle of the night, there used to be an airport called Migs Field out by the lake. Yeah. In the middle of the night, Daly bulldozes the airport and it's now like a concert and a park. But this is fucking Chicago. Like, But this is the one time where the corrupt people in power, didn't actually get their way. The fucking museum. They were blocked by some other park thugs. It's very strange.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Let's not make this about Chicago.
I'm
already tired of talking about this, and I'm from Chicago.
All right, gang. I got one piece of listener feedback, and then we're going to wrap it up and open it up to you guys in the blab. Answer your questions or whatever.
Doc and Nerd.
So before I get to the feedback, David Malofsky over at A Place to Hang Your Cape, ap2hyc.com, is doing this thing. And if you are listening to this episode, within a week of posting, this should still be up. He is running TV Best of 2016 TV Awards, Place to Hang Your Cape TV Awards. I want you to go visit ap2hyc.com/TV Awards, vote on these. And then we're going to have David come on the show, and it'll be a great way to like go over the TV seasons and recap the nominations and who won. But some of the things you can vote for: biggest bad, best season, most kick-ass female, best fight scene, best death. There's a whole bunch of...
There's no best boobs category.
There's no best boobs. There's best breakout star, but no best breakout boobs. Best team up, best dynamic duo, best costume with boobs. No, that's not a category. I added that. Although you could add with boobs at the end of anything. Best fight scene with boobs. Biggest bad with boobs.
Yeah, you can add boobs, whatever.
So anyways, listener, go vote on that. It's lots of fun. And this ties into an email he sent us. David says, I liked your guys' recommendation section in last week's episode. I decided to come up with a couple recommendations of my own for when I come on the show again. I got a little carried away and picked out a specific comic, each for Nerdran, Jockany, and Rugs. I'm going to keep them a surprise for now, but I hope you guys continue with that section because I thought it added a nice flavor to the show in lieu of regular TV reviews.
And I like Dave Malofsky a lot, but him getting carried away is not surprising on anything. If you've ever heard his listener feedback, oh my God, that guy can talk forever about something like random. It'll be like a 5-minute listener feedback from David.
That's right. Get to the question, David.
Yeah, just get to your question, goddammit, David.
Jeez, you think I get excited about things. Wait till. Oh, but it'll be great to.
That guy has like one question, but he'll form it in the midst of a soliloquy.
It takes
like,
7 minutes. No, look, Will, the only way he's going to get better at that is by coming on our show more and practicing. And we'll get him on to go over the awards. But let's do some recommendations. David Mobley says, I don't like that other David guy either. David Mobley and David Molofsky. David Mobley always loves busty women. So he loves the recommendations. I think it's a great idea. Who wants to go first?
Recommendations?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Voltron.
Okay.
I recommend that.
Yeah, that was – no, weren't you going to recommend something else? What were we talking about? You said that's going to be my recommendation.
Oh, shit. What the fuck did I say? I don't remember.
Well, he recommended that earlier, too. Whatever the fuck he recommended.
Well, what were we talking
God
about?
God damn it. I forgot what I was going to recommend.
All right, fuck it. Let's go with Voltron.
Yeah, I'll go with Voltron. Does anybody remember?
What were we – Carlos, are you still here? Do you remember what we were talking about? Wait, we were – what the fuck? You were like, that's going to be my recommendation.
And then we were like, yeah, tell us about it later.
I forgot it.
All right, Brock, do you recommend Voltron? What did you think overall?
Because I watched it and I thought I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the way that they handled it. I enjoyed the reboot. It was a little weird in places. There were some things that were like didn't make any sense why they did that. But overall, they had the essence of Voltron. Like we were talking about, you know, in shows past when they – even though they change a lot of things, they still get the core of what Voltron is. It's a weapon that they use to combat this evil race of people that are trying to take over the universe. And it's the one thing that can fuck up their shit all the time. And it still has that kind of gravitas where like that Voltron is like the ultimate weapon and it can do cool stuff. So I liked it.
Very good. If you watch or like The Legends of Korra, you will like this show. It's the same people. It's the same style. It's like 2D cell and traditional animation mixed together. Very well done. Great characters. Like I said earlier, Hunk is hilarious. And the princess's right-hand man with the mustache, the Scottish dude, he's really funny too. Great characters. And yeah, there's a story arc that goes throughout the whole series. The first episode maybe didn't need to be 60 minutes.
No.
It was a little bit long, but the rest are like 22-minute episodes, and I think there's 10 of them. David, Anthony, what do you got?
I'll go two.
Okay.
I'll go with one jock one and then one nerdy one.
Okay. Well, I hope you don't take mine.
Jock one, if you are super into basketball and like learning about why plays happened or why this team beat this team or what these players are good at, this YouTube channel called B-Ball Breakdown, BB. ALL breakdown.
Okay.
It's very good. Very good for that stuff. This guy, Coach Mike, like literally will have footage and like, this is what happened here. This is what happened there. It's for a nerd that's a sports analytics nerd like me. It's really awesome.
That sounds cool.
And then as far as comics, I would go with Hickman's entire run on Avengers, New Avengers.
Nice.
It went a little off the rails in the middle and kind of towards the end with the Secret Wars stuff. But the beginning, especially where it's New Avengers, were like the first. Maybe volume one, 6-7 issues where it's the Illuminati dealing with worlds and incursions colliding and deciding if they should, you know, sacrifice for the greater good. It's to me really compelling stuff. So check that out.
Buy that in trade. Absolutely. Trade.
It is now out in trade. So you can read that stuff.
And I would read it through the Secret Wars.
Oh, yeah. Once you start going.
Because the end of Secret Wars is so satisfying if you've read all that shit leading up to it. Yeah. And it's quite remarkable. All right, that's good. David Mobley says no Preacher recommendations. Look, Preacher's 4 episodes in. I would recommend it. I like it. We may talk about that. But I kind of have a jock recommendation.
Okay.
ESPN's latest 30 for 30 series.
The OJ one?
Yes. Holy shit, people. It's called Made in America OJ Simpson. It's 5 parts, 90 minutes each. Now, if you watch The People vs. OJ on FX, 10 episodes, and you're like, I don't need a 7.5-hour documentary on OJ, you would be wrong. This fucking thing is so compelling. It starts from the moment he gets into USC. There's so much early footage of him in college that I'd never seen. It's really eerie. And it goes through what the social injustices of the time, the whites riots, and it ties in what the city thought of the LAPD cops. It ties in OJ, his advertising and his sponsorship. And then the last episode goes past the verdict and fills you in on what happened and where he is now. You cannot write a fucking story like this. This is the most insane, real fucking story that I've ever seen, dude. Highly, highly recommend it. No,
Made in America. I would check that out.
Holy
maybe.
Crap, dude.
I don't know about 7 hours.
No,
I'll
it's,
definitely it's, check out some of it.
You, dude, you watch the first one, you're going to want to watch all of them. It's so they're 5 90-minute parts. Like, hey. There's stuff like, in you know, while Muhammad Ali, we talked about Muhammad Ali and how he was such an activist, how he boycotted the war and joined this black movement, and other athletes were banding together. And these guys, they really wanted OJ celebrity. They really wanted OJ star power to back him up. What's OJ doing? He's fucking over here making Hertz commercials and selling Pepsi Cola. He's like, I'm not black. I'm OJ. So the two sides of the argument is he's trying to sort of erase color by saying, I don't see color. I'm OJ. But at the same time, very irresponsible for him to not use a celebrity in times of doing the right thing. The irony being, this guy who really didn't give a shit about the black movement, Johnny Cochran, the brilliant motherfucker that he is, wins the case playing the fucking race card at the very end for a guy that really didn't give a shit about the black community, lived in Brentwood, and would say, I'm not black. I'm OJ. It's fucking fascinating, dude. It's fascinating.
That's what I always say. I'm OJ.
There, hey. Oh, there's, yeah, it's so good.
Go ahead, Ruggs.
Guess what?
What's that?
I remember my recommendation.
Oh, what was it? Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
See, what happened was, while Imran's talking, my brain is working.
It clicks back. Out,
but I forgot.
Love
and
it.
Then I remembered. But then I have to wait for him to finish, and I can forget by the time he finishes. He goes on really long. So I had to seize the moment. It was the Eric Andre show.
Yes, tell me. Yes, Hannibal Buress.
All right, now,
Eric
Hannibal
Andre.
Buress is like the Ed McMahon, or I don't know who else, the Andy Richter, for people that are under, you know,
yeah,
50 years yeah. old.
Who's Jimmy Fallon's guy? That
yeah,
guy.
So he's like the guy that sits next to Eric Andre. Now, if you watch, these are 15-minute shows,
yeah.
And I don't think you could sit through more than a couple of them, but you got to see it just once.
Okay.
Now, the opening of every show is Eric Andre. I don't even think it's on anymore, but you have to see it. You get it on the internet, all right? It's Eric Andre just trashing the set. He just, like, walks in and starts ripping everything apart and just, like, going like a crazy, like, wild ape, like, just ripping the set. And then he starts the show, like, and he's always out of breath when the show starts because he's just been, like, throwing to the couch.
Oh, so he does this live every show. He just destroys
you
everything.
You should just put it on in the YouTube right now in this thing. You got to just watch the beginning of the show. Hannibal Buress is like the sidekick, and every once in a while, like, they'll cut to him and he'll say something funny. But they had this one segment called Hannibal's Hands, where it's just the camera zooming into Hannibal Buress's hands with a little theme song saying Hannibal's Hands, Hannibal. And it makes no sense. But I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, it sounds like I'm gonna have to check this out.
Yeah, it'll take up about 20 minutes of your life, but then you'll be like, okay, I've seen enough of this. I'm happy that I saw it.
Look,
it was weird.
Maybe we'll get.
I don't know if I like it.
I'll throw it in the box. We'll get to the post show. We'll watch a little bit of it. Hey, Domkin 2 is here. What's up, dude? He says, I'm ready for the BVS Ultimate Edition coming next week on digital. Yeah, it'll be out Tuesday. You can buy it and download it and enjoy it. And there's like 10 featurettes and 4 hours of extra shit, and it's a half an hour longer. I'm kind of hyped for that too, a little bit. We'll see. It'd be fun to, like, hate watch this movie again with more things to hate watch.
Yeah.
So
I can't wait.
We're gonna wrap up the main show. We got a couple bits of show business before we do. Guys, if you've been listening, you like what you hear, you want to help us out, say you got a little bit of change left around. Well, we have a virtual tip jar. Called Patreon. Just visit jocknerd.com/Patreon, and there's like 4 hours of bonus audio.
There's tons of bonus shit on there.
For as little as $1 a month, you have access to bonus, and you know what I'm going to do for you? By the time, soon after this post, I will put some bonus shit up there for free, listener. So all you got to do is go to jocknerd.com/Patreon and get a sample. You'll hear some shit that's never been in the podcast feed, that's never been released, free on Patreon. If you like that, just click the Be a Patron button. Help us out, helps out the show, covers the cost, and then you become one of our favorite listeners because you're giving us money. I love that. also, just want to shout out to A Place to Hang Your Cape, being one of the networks we find the shows on that carry us. Thank you, as well as We Be Geeks, the Tangent Bound Network, and on Geek Life Radio every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Central. You could hear one of our shows streaming, just like a random show. It may be the latest show, it may be a couple of shows back, but it's always different every week.
Here, we're going pretty long, so I'm just going to run through this.
Do it. Finish it up.
You want to contact us, jockandnerd.com/contact. You want to help the show, tell a friend. Also, go on to jockandnerd.com/review and write us a nice review. Give us a good rating. Rugboy, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at ReallyRugboy.
That's about it. Look, gang, you're listening to this. Thanks for hanging out to the end. You are officially a member of the Empire of Stupidity. Your job now is to recruit new members into the Empire of Stupidity. Basically, just tell a friend. Turn someone onto this show. Give them one of these.
Jock and Nerd.
Dramatic pause makes it more exciting. Thanks for listening. This has been the Jock and Nerd Podcast. My name is Imran.
My name is Anthony.
He's the Jock.
He's the Nerd.
And we'll catch you next time.
Jocktastic. Bro, do you even podcast?
Go stroke a barbell.
Jock and Nerd.
So let me just start off by saying I was out last night and I got back to my apartment at 4 a.m. and I was like, if I don't drive up to my parents' house, I won't make it to the show. So I drove up to my parents' house at 4 in the morning, slept. I woke up at like 11:30, like my hair disheveled, fucked up, like just tired, like looking like ass. So I took a shower and had a nice little poop.
You are a trooper. First of all,
12 o'clock, yeah. But I haven't eaten any breakfast. So my point is,
shit.
I got like 10 more minutes and I really am. I've been like dying here. So I got 10 more minutes to post show in me.
Okay. And your parents didn't think there was like a mugger or a burglar coming in at 4 in the morning and they just like shot you?
I don't know. I don't know if they know that I'm even here. To be honest with you.
You just slip in and out.
Well, I don't have a computer at my house.
Give us your post EDC wrap up.
I thought you were going to recommend EDC. Let's do that and then you can leave.
Yeah. I mean, that EDC is amazing. Man, it's one of my friends got arrested.
there we go.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I won't say for what.
Possession.
One of my friends got arrested.
Distribution.
Prostitution. Public masturbation.
Public indecency.
Anything's possible.
Drunkenness.
No, it was a good time. It's 135,000 people every night. 10, 12 different stages. The outfits were insane. There were girls wearing pasties that are like, why are you wearing pasties right now? You don't have the boobs for pasties. I mean, I saw a lot of rave booty, got some pictures with rave booty. There was a lot of boob luges on Monday.
What's that?
So what it is girls take, like push their boobs together and you pour a beer in between their boobs. Uh-huh. And then you're like the guy on the bottom is just drinking the beer from.
Oh, you don't need it. That's like you don't need a tap at all.
Sounds
yeah.
Good. And we were doing that. Millennials are proud of right now.
We were doing that. And then it got. It got real weird, and the guys started doing it that had pecs, so then I started doing it.
Dude, the photos, if you look at the photos of EDC, it looks like fucking Neo Tokyo from Akira or like Blade Runner. Like, it's fucking wild.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. I'll give them props for – they put a ton of money in production. Like, it's unbelievable how well they make these stages and produce everything.
And so there's like 13 stages going with music constantly all the time kind of thing.
Yeah.
When it's
can I ask this of Imran, maybe because he knows you better than I do?
Yeah.
How old do you think Anthony's gonna be before his love affair with EDC ends? Like, is he gonna be going at like your age?
That's an interesting question.
You know, that's funny you asked that, because so Sunday we were trying to buy a wristband because one of our friends came in like late and wanted to buy one. So I'm on Craigslist trying to negotiate. And I'm like, out of curiosity, how old are you? She's like, oh, you have to meet my 50-year-old brother-in-law to get it. And I'm like, he's 50 and he was at EDC? I'm like, how old are you? She's like, 39. I'm like, holy shit.
So wait, 39 is old, 50-year-old. Look at this picture I just put in there. That looks, what is that? That looks insane. That's 100, and that's people down there.
How do you shit? That's what I want to know.
Oh, David Mobley says
shit in a porta potty.
Explain for David Mobley what he says EDC is. EDC.
EDC, Electric Daisy Carnival. It is the biggest music festival in America every year.
Oh, really?
Year. Yes.
Bigger than like Bonnaroo or Summerfest bigger. Up in
It's the only music festival that has no musicians.
The biggest music festival that has no actual instruments anywhere.
I will disagree with you completely on that. They had live performances with trumpets. Okay. John Legend came out during Tiesto's set. Wow. Sang.
Well, yeah. There's the crossover now.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff. There was a lot of people pressing play too. it's just a giant festival for electric dance music, and it's a carnival too. It's just crazy.
Listen, I'll tell you this: the minute Pitbull shows up as a featured guest, the fucking shit is over. That's when you bail. The minute Pitbull is in one of these things, you gotta leave. You're like, oh, fuck you guys, I'm done with the EDC.
It's all for what David Mobley's asking. It's all EDM, so there's no like
electronic music,
rock. There's yeah, dance, it's all electronic. There's trippy, no rock. Lights. There's no hip hop. Although I did see, I think a few hip hop artists did come out. Like Soulja Boy. Soulja Boy came out for a few songs.
He's still a thing. Shit.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
He's still trying to fly.
He's not really a thing, but like it's like a funny, like, oh, we'll bring him out for one song.
Yeah, it's like a laugh.
Is he still trying to fly like Superman with one foot on the ground? And
there's 13 stages, man. So I couldn't be at everywhere at one place. So I wasn't there firsthand for his performance on one stage.
So where did you hang out mostly? In one area? Or did you just try and go around as much as possible?
You do as much as possible. I mean, I know like who I want to see. Like there's DJs performing the entire night. There's tons of conflicts, so yeah, you're just hopping around.
Can you give me some music recommendations? Like, if I was a person that wanted to start listening to this and really want to listen to the good stuff and not be like inundated with garbage, what would I listen to? Is there a person that you'd recommend? You'd be like, okay, go to this guy, and this guy's got the best stuff.
It really depends on like what your musical tastes are prior to listening to electronics. So like for me, I came from like hip hop and like rap music, so and R&B. So there's a form of EDM called trap music, which is very similar sounding, just not without the lyrics. So like that's the stuff I listen to a lot of the time. And as far as like who like is really hot at that stuff right now, there's a guy named RL Grime, who it's a play on RL Stein, but R.L. Grime, and the grime is meaning like the grimy beats. So that's someone I'd recommend. But if you're not into like hip hop and trap, you know, and rap music, then you won't like that. I mean, like the guy like Tiesto has been around forever. He's like 47 still.
Yeah.
Doing that stuff. If like Fatboy Slim, so people like that.
I remember that DJ AM was cool because he used to infuse. And then there's these guys called Girl Talk that were very cool.
Girl Talk was very cool at one time.
Yeah, and they would infuse like all of the old songs from like the 80s and 90s and all these other and mix them all together, and that was kind of cool because it was a feat in editing right there.
Yeah, there's a lot of very good producers out there. Producing and DJing live are two different things, but there's a lot of great producers that are performing at EDC.
Is that the puppy?
This is Camo, you guys. Like the puppy. That's Camo.
Oh, they were nice. How big is he already?
He's pretty big. They were good doggies during the show. Everyone was just sleeping. But yeah, that he's very excitable. That's Camo. Okay, get down, Camo.
yeah, I mean, if you're not in the scene, it's not for you, you know. Whatever, it's fine.
But the scene is growing, man. There's clearly it's a huge scene.
Trying to see the value in it. And I've stumbled on the Girl Talk, and I was like, I was impressed by this because this is like a feat of editing all of these crazy genres together and making a new song out of these old other songs, like patchworking all the others. So I can get behind that. I can get behind a lot of like I used to really like the Crystal Method.
Well, there's an art to beat matching and even, hip hop DJs and catching the beat, like all that shit.
But the Method would write actual songs that weren't based on dancing. It was about bringing you through this like electronic experience of like telling a story almost.
Wow.
Right. I admire the producing aspect. Obviously, I admire the live DJing aspect because I'm there. But the producing aspect of like coming up with a beat or coming up with like this sound and making it, repeating it over and over and being like, you know what, that sounds pleasing to the ear. Like if you listen to the, like a lot of the beats that are out there, it's like, that's not even a normal sound.
Like, yeah. Like how did you, what is that? What did you make that thing?
Like when we had a Pac One on and he was talking about like, I just stole this sample and I raised the synth on it like this much.
Yeah.
And then I lowered the bass a little bit on this much. And I'm like, oh, that sounds good. I'm going to use that. Like stuff like that. It's like, how the fuck do you even have the mind to do something like that?
I mean, it's like anything in art. You take a thing and you're like, I'm going to tweak it. I'm going to flip it. I'll reverse it. I'll peek it up. I'll pinch it down. Right. Happy accidents. And then you get a whole new thing and a whole new sound. So there's – and that shit is layered, multi-layered, amazingly mixed. It's just I like the guys who do have the multi pads and they're actually hitting the sequences live
on there. Yeah. So there's people that still do that. It's not as prevalent, but people still do that. Again, producing and DJing live are two different talents.
Because the thing about it is, when you're doing those, hitting those pads, yeah, and you're using the RPS function,
yeah,
you're actually feeling the crowd and doing it to the timing of the crowd in the moment. When you just press play, there's no interaction between the audience and the performer. Like, even right, any live musician feels that connection.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a disconnect. I think that's one of the reasons why I don't feel like it's a valid form of music sometimes, is because, especially live, I understand that the whole creation process, a guy sitting behind his computer and with his keyboard and his MIDI and everything, and he's, you know, making a mix of all these loops. Awesome. That's a creative endeavor. But when you're on stage and people are paying money, and then there's no interaction between you and the crowd, and there's nothing that's going to change in the song at all, maybe that you're going to slide this bass thing up a little bit or mix this in, that's it. It's a very, very, very minimal feedback. But
yeah, I would say, and I understand that point completely. There is validation to the producing of the music behind the scenes. The live aspect, it can be a little bit of a disconnect because there sometimes isn't that interaction. But what's great about EDC in terms of that compared to other EDM festivals or festivals at other places is EDC puts so much money into the production. So like there's fireworks going off. There's fire being shot. The stages are so much more elaborate.
For the lack of connection.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. So they're almost acknowledging like, hey, this DJ might not actually be performing live, but so we're going to make up for it by visual stimulation.
Right.
So.
Well, I see that.
Yeah.
But I do.
And I totally understand like the live aspect of like performing something and then just pressing play. There's a difference. Like pressing play, yeah, you're not really fucking, you might have created that stuff behind the scenes and I admire you for that, but actually doing it live is, you know, a different skill set completely. So, but I also would say, and you guys aren't saying this, but just because you create music behind a keyboard, it doesn't make it any different than actually playing an instrument. It's just a new form of creating music.
No, I agree with that.
You're still a musician. Yeah.
You're still a musician. It's just like, you don't need instruments.
You're not a live musician.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need traditional instruments to be considered a musician.
But I love the guys who play the actual pads and then you're right, Ruggs. That is you, and you could feel that. You feel like the energy coming back around.
Those guys that do that have like a lot more cachet within the community than someone that just creates it behind the scenes and then presses play.
I remember DJ AM used to do that stuff too. He used to kind of do that live. He's dead now.
He's dead. He's no longer AM. He's in the PM.
DJ is in the PM.
He definitely.
You know what I love?
I kept Anthony on here for another 10 minutes.
Oh, boy. Talking nerd. Okay. There's an intro compilation. Let's try that.
We don't have to watch all of them. Just one.
Hold on. Although, if it's funny. Okay, here we go. Let's watch Eric Andre intro compilation.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Eric Andre Show!
This is every time he's done this.
This every time. He's running into this. He grabbed the saxophone and then brought it back. Oh, what the fuck? This guy's a maniac. He's doing karate kicks now. He just ran into the drummer as he was playing. They're tasing him. He's took a bat. What the fuck? I think that's karate.
Yeah, everybody in the band gets it at some point.
What is that? Maneater. Dirty Dancing. Oh, there's a video game version. Mortal Kombat.
Wait. And then he starts the show like that.
But my question is, he doesn't need a set? Wait, was that Hannibal Buress? He just threw Hannibal Buress, a dummy of him. But then he threw it on himself. There's a leprechaun. But then what happens? He threw the leprechaun into the door. Oh, floating head. But then how does he have a set to do a show on afterwards?
It all comes back together.
Oh,
at the
no.
end.
It's all just new.
Oh, why are you trying to apply logic to this?
Yeah, I'm taking a shit.
See? It pops back.
Oh, and then all the stage just comes back. And he's... This is hilarious. Everything resets. And he's breathing hard.
Yeah. It's great.
Okay, that's too fucking funny.
Yeah, you got...
I'm going to have to watch that show. That's hilarious. Then what is the show about? He just interviews
It's like a kind of like they try to do a talk show, but it's like a fuck you talk show. It's like a talk show, but like they're not... You're not going to hear anything. Just him being a dick the whole time.
Not like, it's kind of like Galifianakis in Between Two Ferns.
Yeah,
bits,
basically.
Kind of. Oh, I love that. I love that. That's pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, isn't that
I
great?
I can't believe I've never seen that. That's on Cartoon Network?
Yeah, it's at night. Adult Swim, I believe. You can just watch it on demand. You have it on demand.
Yeah.
It's on
demand. All right, check out the Eric Andre Show.
This shit is awesome.